Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on Neo FM with myself, Patrick Donohue. My guest on the show today is Karan Tejwani. Karan is the author of a recent book entitled Wings of Change, the story of how Red Bull, the world's largest energy drinks manufacturer, made their mark in football. And I'm delighted to say that Karan is joining me on the line. Karan, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi, Patrick. How are you doing?
Yeah, thanks, Emil. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of your book, which is a really, really fascinating book and very, very topical, given that you'd want to be living under a rock over the last few days not to hear what was going on with the European Super League, big business and all that. But before we get talk about your book and the influence of Red Bull in Austria, Germany, USA and Brazil, we might ask you, it's been a really dramatic couple of days. Proposals to start a European Super League, they were leaked on Sunday and it came to being in a really, really dramatic day yesterday that it looks like the idea is dead in the water. Can I just ask you, Karan, what was your reaction, I suppose, to the idea of the Super League, and what did you make of the news last night when it looked, it's dead in the water for all intents and purposes now?
Well, like everyone else, I think I was quite disappointed to see it becoming a thing. I think that there weren't as many people as expected that thought the idea of a Super League was inevitable. I think that it had been coming over the last few years, and COVID just gave it the invitation to sort of happen this year. Maybe if it wasn't for COVID, it would have happened 2-3 years, maybe 5 years from now. But that is ultimately what it was. The Super League was coming. And then when it did, it didn't last very long, which is also a very good thing. As I mentioned earlier, I think I was quite disappointed by it happening. I think that it was very unfair with the way it went. You know, it happened on Sunday, as you mentioned, and there were lots of managers themselves who weren't aware of their clubs or their employers making decisions, which I imagine will affect working relationships in the future. But ultimately, I think I say it's inevitable because of the way football is right now and the way football is governed right now, where the rich just want to get richer and the rest of the clubs can be left to fight for themselves. And it's an awful way of going about things, going about the sport itself, because football was made, you know, we've seen the phrase thousands of times in the last few days that football was made by the poor and it's been stolen by the rich. And I 100% agree with that. But it was good that yesterday was a bit of a victory. It was a small victory for fans that, you know, when they protest, people will listen. And no matter how rich you are, how many zeros you have in your bank account, you will be forced to step down or take a step back when fans or when everyone's against you. Mm. So that was a good win. It was a small win in the grander scheme of things, because this sort of voice is needed in the future. Because while the Super League may have, you know, quieted down yesterday, I don't think it's the end of it. I think that there will be some silly reform that someone will try to make somewhere in order to make more money. Mm. And but that is what we have to fight against. That is what football has to fight against. And, you know, while the Super League is one war that the fans have won, there are going to be more wars in the future to get these people out of the game once and for all.
Yeah, and it's kind of relevant. I was reading your book over the last the couple of weeks and really enjoyed it, because it gave an insight into the Bundesliga issues that I heard about, but wasn't 100% aware. And it was noteworthy when the European Super League was announced, the proposed teams, there was no Bundesliga teams. Can you just, before we chat about your book, the 50+1 model, a lot of people are talking about that, and it is it's in Germany. Do you mind just telling us a little bit about that model? Just because I know some of our listeners mightn't be overly aware with the Bundesliga. So do you mind just giving us an insight into the 50+ model in the German Bundesliga? And if we were to bring in a model like that, would it be a good idea, and is it indeed possible in England, given you have such rich owners, the likes of Man City owners and the Man United owners?
I think that it seems pretty difficult. I think that bringing it to England would be quite difficult, especially in the current climate we're in. To start with, the 50+1 rule is essentially that fans or members of the clubs or members of clubs, they have 50% of the voting rights plus one share. So that's 50 plus one, hence the name. They don't own 51% of the shares. That's a common misconception. And the fans, while they don't profit from the clubs, they don't have any monetary benefits from it. That goes down to the higher members. They have the right to make their voice heard and veto club decisions if they want to. So it's essentially a fan-led thing where fans have a greater voice in their club's decisions, and it's worked out quite well in German football. And in Germany, it's one of the most sacred rules, you could say, because it's been so protected over the last few years, and even it survived a pandemic along with German football clubs as well. So it's been quite protected, and it's I think it's worth having in European football because ultimately the game is for the fans, so it's only right that they got to make decisions for their clubs. Whether it can come to England or anywhere else in Europe, I can't see it happening because it's too difficult. The logistics of it are too complicated. For example, if you take Manchester United, you can't, if for example, England implements, say, the 50 plus one rule, you can't see the Glazers selling 49% of their shares or about half the club to the fans. It's because it's worth a lot of money. So it seems quite difficult in terms of money, in terms of the logistics of it. Would it be a good thing? I think it would in say a fantasy scenario where it does happen. I think it would be a good thing. I think that English football for too long has had a problem of, silencing the fans. We saw it with 2005 when the Glazers came over. We saw it in 2009, 2008, sorry, when Manchester City were taken over. So it could be a good thing where fans have more of a say, but I can't see it happening in the next few years.
Yeah, and your book charts the journey of Red Bull entering football, and it started in Austria in Salzburg. What was the reaction? Because Red Bull is just such a massive company, and I love the little details at the start of your book. The first chapter, you're telling me really, really amazing facts. You're as the time when your book went to print and was published, 75 billion cans of Red Bull were sold worldwide. I just really, really loved that detail. And you go into the backstory how Red Bull was formed. But back to Red Bull entering into Austrian football, what was the reaction of the other Austrian clubs? And indeed, it was taken over the Salzburg club. Was there much opposition when that happened?
I think more than the outside, the non-Salzburg fans, I think Red Bull faced opposition from the Salzburg fans themselves. The problem, commercialization in Austrian football wasn't uncommon. We'd seen clubs being taken over, or not taken over, have they had their names changed, had their names adjusted to fit their sponsors' names. Even now, we have a club that's backed by Swarovski, the crystals company. Even Austria Salzburg back in the day when they reached the UEFA Cup final, they were officially called Casino Salzburg. So it's not uncommon for names to be changed in Austrian football, but what Red Bull planned was a massive shift, not just the name, but the club, the colors, the history of it. They want to sort of erase the past history of Austria Salzburg, the stadium name and all that. It just, they wanted to make it purely Red Bull Salzburg, and they purely want to make it Red Bull only. When there were rumors of Red Bull buying Austria Salzburg, there was a bit of joy because Austria Salzburg was struggling in terms of money and all that. So people felt Red Bull would bring them a little more stability. But when the news came out that Red Bull wanted to make these overall changes, the Salzburg fans felt a bit betrayed, and they formed their own Phoenix Club with the name of Austria Salzburg, and they support them now. But Red Bull have done quite well to sort of appeal to the newer fans in Salzburg. They have community events, or when they could have community events, they had community events. They played their Salzburg anthem before games. They did that sort of thing. So they did well to connect with the fans and sort of build their own players through a structured youth system and all that. But it took a lot of trying. And while there is still a fair bit of animosity around Austria that these people exist, and they've sort of erased the history of Austria Salzburg, which is a fairly historical club in Austria, some people do recognize the good work they've done.
Yeah, and they seem to be incredibly successful at academy level and sourcing players like the circus that will be this summer will be the sale of Haaland, and he was at Salzburg. People will be familiar with Sadio Mane. What are Salzburg doing so right that they're able to bring players in and they just seem to really, really prosper?
It's a combination of a good sporting model in terms of their finances, in terms of their scouting, and in terms of their style of football. So when Ralf Rangnick came to the Red Bull football family in 2012, he implemented a philosophy or a sporting philosophy where they follow the three C's, which was capital, concept, and competence. Now, the capital was that they wanted to be self-sufficient in terms of their money. Of course, they have the backing from Red Bull, which is a fair bit of backing from a very rich billionaire. But they wanted to be self-sufficient. The concept was the style of football they played, which was, you know, attacking football, vertical football, and you know, pressing high up the pitch, which is the sort of Rangnick way, and he sort of developed that. And the competence was the quality the players show, which is the desire to sort of become even better players and giving them the right environment and the right coaches to become even better players. So, you know, players, Salzburg especially, has been quite successful. They've not been consistently playing in the Champions League. They've only reached the group stage twice. But despite that, they do quite well in the Europa League or in the domestic competition. As you mentioned, Haaland, Sadio Mane, they all came through there. Minamino even, who plays for Southampton now from Liverpool. Lots of other players. And there will be lots of other players in the future as well. Even Patson Daka is expected to leave this summer. But it's not just that. It's the coaches as well, because they have such strong links across Europe where they have access to top-level German coaching. And they have influence, or they had influence from Ralf Rangnick. They've developed coaches like Roger Schmidt and Jesse Marsch right now, Marco Rose, who's going to Dortmund. So it's not just the players that come through, it's the young coaches that improve as well because of having a good environment, good backing, good support, and essentially good place to grow.
Yeah, and you mentioned the coaches, and Jesse Marsch, he seems to be going to be... I wouldn't be surprised if he goes over to the Bundesliga. And Nagelsmann, who it's just incredible, his story, because I was reading this morning about Ryan Mason. He's taken Tottenham at the age of 29, and people were saying this is incredible. But it seems that their model, the Red Bull model, and Nagelsmann is only 33, and he's in charge of Leipzig, and they're doing incredibly well. So it is, and even him, maybe I'll ask you about, he seems to be a manager that's really buying into the Red Bull philosophy.
Yeah, he does. He does. He is essentially one of the, what's the word I'm looking for? He's been influenced by Ralf Rangnick as well. Mm. Because Ralf Rangnick, during his time at Hoffenheim, was Julian Nagelsmann started off coaching when Ralf Rangnick was at Hoffenheim, and similar to what Red Bull are doing now, Rangnick did the same at Hoffenheim, and Hoffenheim was perhaps a less international version of what Red Bull are right now. But yeah, lots of coaches have been inspired by Ralf Rangnick, and they've all come through and become great coaches in their careers. You know, it's not just Julian Nagelsmann or Jesse Marsch, even Thomas Tuchel is at Chelsea right now. Mm-hmm. Marco Rose, as I mentioned, going to Dortmund. They've all been influenced by him, and that all comes down to him. And obviously, in terms of in the case of Nagelsmann itself, it comes down to the environment of coaching in Germany, where they're willing to give young coaches a chance. Mm-hmm. You know, Nagelsmann got his job at Hoffenheim at the age of 28. And that's not a normal age for a coach in a league as difficult as the Bundesliga. So he's grown from there, and he believes in his own natural progression. So giving coaches a chance is quite important. It's rare to see it in England or anywhere else in Europe. You know, you mentioned Ryan Mason, but for Ryan Mason, it's never been a permanent job. Mm. If he does a good job, if he wins the League Cup, we don't know if he's going to get a permanent job at the end of the season. It's just a temporary thing for now to accommodate until next season. But in Germany, when Julian Nagelsmann was a youth team coach, he was improving. He won the youth league title with Hoffenheim. And there was a plan in place to give him the first team coach job on a full-time basis. And ultimately, that was given to him a few months earlier than expected because the Hoffenheim head coach left his role. So, you know, there is a good amount of succession planning in the Bundesliga. I think a lot of people tend to ignore that because they feel like, you know, players are sold. early in their careers. You know, Diop Upamecano is an example. He's going to Bayern. But Bundesliga clubs, compared to other leagues, do a good amount of succession planning, and that's benefited people like Julian Nagelsmann.
And where do you think his next move will be? There's been some talk of him going over. We were talking about Tottenham there with Ryan Mason taking charge for the next couple of months. Do you think his future remains in Germany, or will he perhaps be tempted to take the Tottenham job?
It's quite difficult to say at this moment because there's lots of factors to consider. The first thing to consider is that he has a long-term contract or a relatively long-term contract until 2023, and any club that wants him this summer will have to pay a significant amount, maybe even a world record amount for a head coach. You know, the record right now is 15 million euros, and I wouldn't be surprised if that record is broken this season if Nagelsmann does leave. So that's important to consider. And Spurs, having already spent, or they will spend, a fair amount of money to Jose Mourinho after sacking him, I don't know if they'd want to spend that much again on a new head coach. So that fact is important to consider. There's also been rumors that he is the top favorite for the Bayern Munich job, which is going to be empty at the end of the season. The Bayern fans like him. He likes Bayern because he's grown up a Bayern Munich fan. He's from Munich itself, so it's a bit of a dream for him, I'm assuming, to coach the club he's loved throughout his life. But you know, the same for Bayern as well. They'd have to spend a fair bit of money to bring him in, which, unlike Tottenham, they probably can afford this summer. So that's an important part to consider. But based on Julian Nagelsmann himself, he's often come out and said that, you know, when he was leaving Hoffenheim for RB Leipzig, he said that he rejected the Real Madrid job, and he rejected big approaches because he wanted to sort of satisfy his own natural progression, which was to grow as a coach and not go from, you know, a mid-table club to a Champions League level club. And he did that with Leipzig. It gave him a good base to build on, and he took them to the Champions League semi-final. And they've been in two Bundesliga title races for, you know, they fought at the end, but put up a good fight under Nagelsmann. So, you know, whether he sees the Bayern Munich job as the right step for himself, it's hard to say. So maybe he may look at Tottenham as a good stepping stone before going to Bayern Munich, but you know, it's hard to say at this point, but I imagine that he'd be leaning more towards Bayern Munich than Tottenham.
And what about the future for Red Bull? They're in four countries. You go into a lot of detail, and it's really, really fascinating in the book. Where do you see the future? Do you think they're going to expand their brand, that they will look to take over any more countries across Europe, or how do you see that kind of developing?
They've said that they want to expand their international portfolio. You know, I didn't mention this in the book because it only happened a week after the book released that Red Bull, they formed a partnership with the club, or RB Leipzig formed a partnership with the club in India. And I think that's part of their international expansion strategy, that they want to form more links, not at a not at a top level, but at an academy level or a developmental thing. Firstly, because it's more cost effective, and secondly, because it just gives them less to manage. I think that, you know, bringing in young players, which is their top philosophy at the moment, is working out quite well for them, and they'd want to do that across the world. You know, a common trend to look at that is that wherever Red Bull, the energy drink, is doing well, they try to diversify themselves into football. So in the year that America was doing quite well in sales for Red Bull, the energy drink, they formed the New York Red Bulls. And in 2020 and 2019, Red Bull, the energy drink, sold very well in India, and that very year they formed a partnership with an Indian club. So it's a very interesting trend to look at, and I think that if they do form new links in new countries, it would be at an academy level, not at a high level, especially in Europe because of UEFA's FFP regulations and conflict of interest. But yeah, I do assume that it'll happen most probably in the Far East. Maybe in Japan, Thailand, or something like that, because Red Bull is quite popular there.
Yeah, and finally, Karan, before I let you go, how it looks like Salzburg have the they're in ahead in Austria. It looks like they're going to win another league there. What about Leipzig? How do you assess their season? It Bayern did. I know that they lost last night, and it looks like it's another title for Bayern. Would you say, when they reflect on their season, is it a disappointment given they left the Champions League early as well? I know they got through the group stage. Would it go down as a disappointing season, or is there still a work in progress?
I think that it's still a work in progress for sure, but I think that whether it'll be considered a successful season or a bad season will be determined in the next few weeks, because they're still in the DFB Pokal, which is the German Cup. They got the semi-final in about 10 days or so, and then they got the final if they qualify. They got the final a few weeks after that, so I imagine that they want to win their first major trophy, because they haven't won a trophy yet. So I think that that'll be top of their objectives. The title race in terms of Bundesliga, I think at the start of the season, if you asked them, they would have said that finishing second would be decent because of the quality of Bayern, and at the time Dortmund, we assume, would be very good. But based on the last few weeks, they were doing quite well until March, but then they lost to Bayern Munich, which ultimately ended the title race. But then they had a chance again last week, which they eventually blew up. So they feel quite disappointed about that for sure. But it's been a season of perhaps transition, because they lost the main goal scorer on Timo Werner, and they've had a few issues up top. But I think it's been a decent season for them, and if they win the cup, it'll be quite a positive one to build on.
That's great. Listen, Karan, thanks so much for joining us. Your book, Wings of Change: How the World's Biggest Energy Drinks Manufacturer Made American Football, it's available now. I guess Amazon would point people in the direction. Would that be the best place for people to pick up your book?
Yeah, there's lots of places: Amazon, Book Depository, Pitch Publishing's own website. Lots of good places to buy on.
Well, it's a really, really fascinating read, and I think football fans will really enjoy it, particularly given what's gone on over the last few days. I think it'll give people an insight into it gives an insight how business and football collide in Germany and Austria and Brazil and America, but it also gives an insight brilliantly about the nature of the Bundesliga, because there's so much of a conversation about that. So listen, Karan, thanks so much for joining us today on the show.
No worries, Patrick. Thank you for having me.